ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday. It's another stormy day. I mean, it is crazy driving from one side of town to the other. We had nothing but sun and heat for a while, so I decided to get out. We'd had Kennedy, our 3-year-old granddaughter, at the house. Good time. Spent most of the day yesterday and the morning today, and she likes to get out and we have a pool, and she enjoys just tossing whatever she can find into the pool. I mean, luckily most of it floats. So I was decided I'd go out.
She's not throwing her cousin in yet.
Not yet. Give it a while. I wouldn't be shocked at her doing. She'd want to throw granddad in. I can tell you that. So I decided to go out and fish the things out of the pool before I clean up the yard. And it's like, and then out of nowhere, I mean, it came another one of those, as we have seen, it seems like almost every day, it doesn't just rain, it pours. And I'm out there in the rain doing that, and I'm thinking, well, it doesn't really matter, I'm gonna get wet. I mean, as soon as I got everything out, sun's back out, it's steaming, and it looks like, within 15 minutes, except for a couple of spots in the roads, it looks like it hadn't even rained. Then I start heading over to the station, and I came in and told Tracy she better roll her windows up. It is about to pour here.
I feel like one or two really intense rainstorms a day has become sort of the norm.
Yeah.
And that was the case again today. So hopefully nothing got ruined from the sudden thunderstorm we got here in the Auburn Opelika area a couple of hours ago.
No, I tell you what, it has probably been the most bountiful or fruitful spring and summer as far as growing anything. Even things, especially things you didn't intend to grow. But I mean, the things that you would like to grow have done great. Folks that I know that have gardens say they've never seen tomatoes and vegetables like they have this year.
And there probably hasn't been, I'm probably getting the term wrong, but the char you get from exposure to the sunlight over an entire summer in the Southeast, mm-hmm. the danger of too much sun for plants and
oh, yeah.
vegetables and stuff.
They're not burning.
You haven't had to worry about that very, very much this...
No, because when they get, it seems like right when they get to the verge of it, here comes a nice... a nice strong rain.
Yeah. So hopefully, hopefully everybody made it out okay. In the storm.
But it's just another typical summer day. So welcome into the Wednesday drive. It's the last drive for this week, because we're very fortunate to have tomorrow and Friday off. Yeah, I was on with the Sandersons again this morning up in Tuscaloosa, and they're like, "You got tomorrow off?" And it's like, "Yeah, do you guys work Labor Day?" "Well, no." And I went, "Well, okay, there you go." Okay.
I mean,
how can you not work Labor Day when you're covering football?
I know some businesses. Yeah, that's crazy. And the Monday of Labor Day is a must in our industry. But I know some folks taking the week for July 4th.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big travel week, we're incredibly grateful that the station.
Oh, absolutely.
Giving us tomorrow and Friday. But it's hopefully I know a lot of folks doing a little. Either doing some traveling or some celebrating in the next couple of days, and like we were saying earlier, hopefully the weather cooperates, because there's some outdoor festivities planned in the Auburn Opelika area. Some really cool stuff they do every year.
Oh, always yeah. Fun to see the fireworks, and that there's usually some entertainment involved as well. So yeah, hopefully that can be worked in around any weather situations that we have. So, it's the last drive before July 4th, which used to be considered like midsummer. I mean, it was like the middle of your summer break back in the day.
I griped about it Monday, I think, Bill. But we're already seeing back to school ads.
They've been inundated.
For weeks,
they've been out since Memorial Day. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so and that's That's got to be crushing for kids, you know, the first week of the actual summer to see back to school stuff.
To school.
Get ready. But it's a sign of the times, and we are going to be we're going to be back at it with media days in
Less than two weeks, about a week and a half,
you know, when we get started with our media days coverage here on ESPN 106.7, and shortly after that, fall practice gears back up. And then you're going to be in the thick of previewing that gigantic first weekend of the – I mean, you got week zero, but that gigantic first weekend of the college football season, that end of August, beginning of September, with Auburn-Baylor on Friday night in Waco. And it's also – it's ambush season, right?
Yes, it is. I mean, we were expecting – and Jason Caldwell, you know, was planning on being here, but there's an ambush tonight. I forgot which one –
I think it's Lake Martin, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
So I could have that wrong.
But no, I think you're right. I think you are right. Yeah. I didn't remember if it was like Alex City or Lake Martin. It is Lake Martin. And Jason Caldwell, who is usually with us on Wednesdays, is going to be up there at the ambush.
Ferg is on his way up there, and I think is going to try to join us at some point before the end of the show to talk a little bit about the ambush and a lot of the topics we covered on the Observer podcast of late. You know, a lot of NBA headlines with regards to recent Auburn players, whether it's the draft or NBA transactions. You've heard some familiar names pop up in recent weeks, and it's always great to catch up with our buddy from the Auburn Observer, Justin Ferguson. Like you said, that's why we don't have Jason today like we would on most Wednesdays.
And then I thought, well, with it being right here at the fourth, it'd be great to have Don Dunn check in with us. But they're still down in Florida,
right? I mean, look, we really wish we could bring you another grilling and chilling segment with our buddy Don Dunn.
Oh, I'd love that. Today.
Talking tips. If you have grilling questions for Don Dunn, I guess we could forward them and try to get an answer back to you. But Bill, are you a hot dog guy? I know a lot of hot dog chatter on the just with the July 4th coming up.
With the competition.
Yeah, the competition. Yeah. I've seen sales at different places.
I've never tried to see how many hot dogs I could eat.
No,
in a timed period.
I got to tell you, on the competitive eating thing, vile. Count me out, right? It's, you know, again, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, I'm not someone that just can't turn away from that. Yeah. I definitely can because it can get a little unsettling.
Yeah, you know, I think when I was younger, I'm not going to talk about my stage age, but when I was younger, Bill, like I would. These sorts of things would make me real mad, and I'd want to expand, you know, great detail. Here's what I don't like. You know, now it's like, you know what, if someone likes that, you can enjoy it, but I know what's not for me. and competitive eating is you know, watching folks do that on the fourth or really any time is not my cup of tea. But hot dogs in general, I mean, especially around the fourth on the grill, mm-hmm. you can't beat it. What's the correct, like what goes on? What's the correct toppings?
See, I'm way plainer than most people. So
ketchup and mustard?
Yes.
Okay. I know some folks are like virulently anti ketchup.
Oh no,
on a hot dog. I like other stuff too, but no, I mean an onion, you know, something like that's not so bad, but. Yeah, no.
I'm a plain sort of guy. I want to be able to taste, and so I'm more picky about the dog itself as I am usually a cut of meat.
Okay,
I'm not one that is wanting to slather sauces and things on top of meat.
You want to taste the meat?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
I got you.
I don't want to hide it. If it's bad enough, I feel like if it's bad enough that I got to put a lot of stuff on it.
Yeah.
Then what did I even need to get that? You know, I could have just gone with the condiments and not the meat.
You're covering up at some point, mm-hmm. right? When you think about sauces and garnishes and things like that, and I get that you don't want to overload and miss out on the actual, on the star of the show. But yeah, hopefully folks enjoying their burgers and dogs. This weekend,
oh,
and,
yes.
and if we had Don Dunn, we'd have more insight on what to do around the grill.
Yeah, see, we'll have a pretty varied selection from, you know, over the few days, from pulled pork to barbecue chicken to perhaps some ribs to burgers and dogs.
I've been doing chicken a lot on the grill of late, and yeah, it's good. You know, it's certain cuts can dry out if you're not too careful, but when done correctly, barbecue chicken, it's fantastic.
All right, I mean, if you want to give us your holiday favorites, yeah. What are your grilling favorites? What's your go to?
Are the kids into fireworks yet? Has that sort of?
Nah, not yet. Okay. I mean,
maybe this year.
Kennedy's three.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say
three. Sarah's 9 months. Not yet, and Will's not here yet. So I mean, oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's. Did you know about that, Drew? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, yeah. I think I'd mentioned that. Kennedy's going to have a little brother.
Okay. Yeah.
How about that?
Congratulations, Bill. Yeah.
They're not into the fireworks yet. 334-321-1390. It is Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We'd love to hear from you. I mean, there's not a ton going on. There's some afternoon baseball. I mean, it's that time of year. But there's not a ton. Looking forward to hearing, though, what is said at the Ambush this evening. So hopefully we'll be able to check in with Justin Ferguson before the end of the show and just find out what the tone of some things are up there at Lake Martin.
I mean, we learned more about the basketball schedule this week with the with the opponents for the players era, and you look at Auburn's. I mean, I talked about it with Ferguson on the podcast. Like, I know it might seem like last season's non-conference had some bigger brand names on it, you know, namely Duke. But yeah, the fact is,
this one's still, I mean,
it's loaded.
It's
absolutely loaded. I mean, Purdue and Houston could very well be two of the top three or top four teams in college basketball. Now you know you're playing Michigan in Vegas. Michigan's going to be in a lot of top fives and top tens in the preseason. Plus you got the NC State game in the non-con, and I think Arizona. I mean, you've got on the road. You're going to Arizona as well in December. So I mean, this is a and there's also the chance of a third game against one of the teams from that loaded field.
Yeah, that's right.
In the players' era. So
now I was asked this morning, and I have no idea.
Championship.
I'm trying to figure out. Yes. Is there any way of figuring? Are there two sides to the bracket? But I mean,
I get the sense there was language in the CBS CBS sports story about the schedule for the players era at the bottom, talking about how, I mean, I think what they hope is that it's like the BCS. I think they hope there are only two undefeated teams. And then they can take those two undefeated teams
after two games.
I think they hope that there's two, because the field is so strong, that there are only two teams that go 2-0, and then they can take those two teams and let them play a championship game. If there are more than two undefeated,
there could be nine. If there unbeaten teams,
yes,
and nine winless teams.
If there are more than two, then I think they start getting into, then it's the BCS.
Tiebreakers.
I think they start getting into, they start evaluating different factors and deciding, and maybe multiple teams will have the chance at a championship in that situation. Like, multiple teams will have the ability to say that they went 3-0 at the players' era, and they can claim a championship. But yeah, I don't think there's. I mean, they're not playing more than three games, and it's a 16 team field where everybody's playing two games and then a third game to be determined. So I'm thinking they're hopeful. Like, the hope is that you have very few undefeated teams and you can easily make a championship game from it. The more undefeated teams you have, Bill, like you said, the more complicated that could be. Although if it's an even number, you're probably fine. If it's four undefeated teams, then you can just have two teams. You can have two championship games and let the two 3-0 teams call themselves players era champions or co-champions or however you want to do it. But yeah, the more teams you have, and if you have an odd number, then you could have an odd team out as far as playing that that third game for a championship.
Just got a text from Tex. I guess he's at the lake. He was like, "Hey, tell me more about the ambush and any way of getting there." As I try to check into that, the first thing that I clicked on says, "Sorry, we're no longer accepting. So they may be sold out." I see an RSVP-ify, which was Ambush Lake Martin, AU. Let's see, it was Ambush Lake Martin Auburn Club was the website, but it says we're no longer accepting registrations or RSVPs. So yeah, the doors are opening at 5:30, but it.
Our buddy Tex could maybe work the Auburn Alumni Association clubs and affiliates phones and see if he can see if he knows somebody going.
Maybe. I'm seeing
it does appear to be sold out though.
Yeah, I believe that is the case for tonight, and it gets started at 5:30 with Hugh Freeze and Bruce Pearl. All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind as we continue here.
Looking at the alumni.auburn.edu website, Hugh Freeze, Stephen Pearl, Butch Thompson, Larry Vickers in Lake Martin tonight, hosted by Andy Burcham, starts at 5:30, Willow Point Country Club.
Right.
Registration for this location is full. Tickets still available for Atlanta on Monday, July 14th, with Hugh Freeze, Butch Thompson, and John Cohen. That's at the Dogwood at Westside Paper. That's the Monday of Media Days.
Yes,
by the way, the Monday night before Auburn goes.
So there you go in Atlanta.
That's during the Home Run Derby.
Man, so another thing that is going on during that time frame in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's the Monday night of SEC of SEC Media Days. They're having that event, and that one still has tickets you can register for. But the one tonight in Lake Martin, according to the website, is sold out.
Right, and you know the one in Atlanta makes sense that way. Hugh Freeze spends the night up. Next morning makes the rounds there at Media Days. All right, let's get to our first break of the afternoon. Again, we'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390, and that's sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. Drive Text Box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Just underway. Come on in and join us here on the it's Wednesday, isn't it? I wasn't here Monday. The Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday. Yeah, again, I have to remember that. it's been a crazy week with not being back on Monday, and yesterday felt like a Monday. Today feels like Tuesday, but it might as well be Friday because we're off for the next couple of days. So it is the final day of The Drive before the 4th. And we are getting closer. We mentioned some of the goings-on with Ambush up at Lake Martin this evening, and then SEC Media Days in just a couple of weeks. There was a bit of news yesterday, and the more I look at it, it's like that is a really nice pickup, Jacoby Matthews yesterday for Auburn. And it'll be really interesting to see that a luxury that Auburn has. I mean, they probably have... a half dozen players who are capable of starting for an SEC school in the secondary right now.
And I had someone reach out after the show yesterday and asked about, I mentioned Champ Anthony, and I have no insight or news about how Champ Anthony's recovery is going. Everything we've heard has been positive.
Right.
We were asked by Tex yesterday, like, what is uncertain in the secondary, or what could have changed recently that would make for that would put Auburn in the market for a defensive back in early July, late June. And I think that the fact that this guy's a DJ Durkin connection,
the fact that he was by some of the services the number one safety prospect in the nation 3 years ago when he signed with DJ Durkin in Texas A&M. That's why. If a player like that becomes available, I don't care who you have. If they're interested in coming, I think you jump all over it.
What I think Auburn's done too is they've put together a really solid group of veteran defensive backs to where, I mean, look, if Eric Winters or Newboy Fagans or Blake Woodby or Donovan Starr, like if one of those guys needs to be on the field, they can play their way onto the field. But there's going to be, you know, if you know when everyone's healthy, there are going to be a lot. I mean, you have the guys returning who played a lot last year, like you know at corner, Kayan and Jay Crawford, and you know, you can lump. I mean, KLF played some outside last year. You've gone into the portal and attracted players like, I really want to see what Pleasant's role is. As a like, if, he,
yeah,
if he's
yeah, is he going to be more of just a return guy who plays some? But I mean, he played a lot for Tulane. I mean, I feel like, you know, he could very well figure into that nickel picture.
Exactly. I mean, so they've got veterans that return from last year. They've got multiple experienced guys that they've brought in from the portal, and a really interesting group of freshmen, and sort of how that shakes out. And who is now? I remember, like, and I, this is the other side of the ball, but like I haven't written off Bryce Kane by any shot.
No.
But I think when people talked like last year about the receivers, there was this belief that all four of them are going to get out there, and it's like, well, with, you know, with one or two of them, and Perry didn't play. You know, Perry's playing time was up and down. Like, I think it wasn't as though all of them are going to necessarily play a lot. They might be on different timetables, different schedules. That could be the case with some of these freshman defensive backs too, right? Some of them,
yeah, it
could be on the field a ton. Might take a little bit longer. Although they all went through the spring, which is right. Which is different than the situation last year at receiver. So I will.
Although
see,
you know, Malcolm didn't go through the spring.
That's right. Malcolm didn't go through the spring. Malcolm showed up in the fall, and you were. I mean,
what I always
tell people about Malcolm is when he was going in motion in pads, it's like even that's a different speed. Like watching him in fall practice last year, it's like, oh, even stuff like pre-snap is you know, you can clearly see that this guy is explosive, and yeah, really really want to see what he does in his second year.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Happy 4th of July week.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, I had a question about, you know, a name y'all just brought up in Bryce Kane. He's somebody that I don't know anything, but he's somebody that I don't know how much he will figure into the wide receiver room. I felt like Auburn has been a running back short since the Brian Battee tragedy. And I wonder if there was a role for like an Ontario McCaleb or for a wide receiver to convert to maybe a third down possession back or somebody, you know, on a wheel route to, out of the backfield. Would Kane be a likely candidate to maybe make that adjustment or what's y'all's thoughts on that?
I think it would be more. I mean, the guys you're going to see more on jet sweeps, and you know, running the fake jet sweep, and then on wheel routes would be more Malcolm, Sam Turner, maybe
Singleton,
maybe Eric Singleton. Bryce is a little undersized. I mean, Ontario was light, but he was lean and wiry and. And just it was amazing that he could take some of the licks that he did. But I mean, he was six. You know, he was around 6 feet. Bryce is probably, you know, maybe 5'10", and you know, 155, 160. I don't know. I mean, what everybody's just hoped is you get a chance to see a healthy Bryce Kane and figure out exactly where he could help.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like. A guy that, you know, we've seen Bryce Kane types that are these undersized, explosive possession receivers, inside receivers. You know, I mean, how many catches did Var have, right, over multiple seasons at Auburn? And the thought of Bryce Kane being an even more explosive version of that is really interesting. It's just crowded. Like that's a room that, you know, Hugh Freeze has done as good a job at that position as maybe any on the team, as far as turning it from a weakness into a strength, as far as when he you know what he had when he arrived versus what he has now, and that you know, a lot of mouths to feed. You know, I think it'd be great to see Bryce take a big step in year two. There's a lot of other receivers that are clamoring for receptions this year, and it's interesting, but I also think that they've, like, your thought of moving him to a different position is interesting, but they've done a pretty good job bringing running backs into the fold too. I think they like the thought of the UConn.
They really, really like Darrell Robinson. That's one thing I've heard, and Jason wrote about this the other day, and I was going to get him to talk about it. Jason said the reports of Darrell Robinson's offseason have been very, been very strong. Just glowing reports that Auburn may have that, you know, that big back that they haven't had in a few years, but he's got he's shown really good speed here in the summer workouts as well.
I want to say Alston could end up being a Jarquez situation too, where Jarquez was an excellent backup that happened to be Tank Bigsby's teammate. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Alston turns out to be an excellent running back who happened to be teammates with Jarquez Hunter last year, and so he didn't get to play as much as some of the other best running backs in college football.
Well, and one more question I had on that was with that running back room, how much did Auburn – I never heard anything one way or the other. How much did Auburn take a run at somebody like Jaden Ott in the portal?
It would have been tough with Ott.
I don't think they really did.
I think after Ott left Cal, Auburn had a pretty crowded situation at running back, and so it would have been tough to convince Ott to join Alston and Cobb, and maybe you already had Henderson in the fold at that point, because I think Ott may have left after the spring. Like, he was a sort of a later, and there were places in the SEC that figured to be pretty good that had a more urgent situation at running back, and I think Oklahoma's a pretty good example, and who knows what sort of, you know, urgent need plus good player in the portal, you know means cash register noises when Oklahoma gets involved, and I would be surprised to learn. I mean, he's a great player, so maybe the answer is like, yeah, they called, but there were places that needed Ott pretty, you know, more urgently than Auburn did, I think.
All right, thank you guys.
Appreciate the call, John.
I mean, if Auburn had.
I don't think they had running back as anywhere near the top of their priorities.
We haven't mentioned Alvin Henderson either, who I know some people really, really like. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, he's a true freshman, but we've seen situations where a true freshman shows up and he's as good or better than the other guys in the running back room. And I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, but mention Alvin Henderson too as a guy who could make a who could make an impact. Ott figures to be a huge part of that offense at Oklahoma, if he can stay healthy, with the new look, John Mateer led Sooners offense that Auburn's going to see early in the season.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Daniel, hang on. You'll be up first when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls and right back to The Drive hotline. And Daniel is up next. Hey, Daniel.
Hello, Daniel, my brother.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are staying dry today.
It just depends on where you are. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just coming off of Gay, and, it was raining on one side and not the other.
Yep.
Well, hey, I wanted to call in and hear y'all's thoughts on what Mr. Feinbaum said regarding Arch Manning. Are y'all familiar with what he said?
No, I have not heard.
Was this at his new live show? Was this at his new at the one man at Feinbaum? Feinbaum comes alive.
That's coming up.
Yeah, Feinbaum comes alive. The live show he's doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what excerpt it was. I just saw a brief 60-second clip of him really hyping up Texas, of course, and Arch Manning, and him just you know, slobbering at the mouth. As
well, he's not the only. If he's bullish on Arch Manning this year, he's hardly the only one. Like, yeah, I mean, I think we were talking about it earlier in the week. Texas, I would guess right now, Texas is the number two team preseason in the polls. I think Ohio State is going to be one with the team they bring back and the fact that they're the reigning national champion. You can make the case for Bama or Georgia, but it feels like you know more about Texas's quarterback situation with what you've seen from Arch than Gunnar Stockton or Ty Simpson. And so I sort of understand why. Like it would be it's still a big bet, and it's largely based on potential. But I get why folks think that Arch Manning is set up for a gigantic season.
For sure. I don't disagree with that. What he specifically said is, and you guys can look this up. I'm not making this up. It sounds like I am, but I'm really not. He said that Arch Manning is going to be the best quarterback since Tim Tebow.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, if that's the case, Texas probably should have played him even more over the last 2 years.
I mean, how many guys are we going to talk about over the many years since Tebow? I mean, of course, as an Auburn fan, I would say Cam is maybe the GOAT, but Joe Burrow, a second close GOAT. I mean, there's just too many great quarterbacks to just outlandishly just say that.
I mean, Tebow's numbers were bananas in 06, and he is the only one of those quarterbacks you named that won two national championships.
Right.
Although he didn't win them both as a starter, was the backup coming off the bench in 06 and won the title in 08 and had 3 years as a starter where Florida was consistently one of the very best teams in the country. I mean, if you wanted to make the case that no college football quarterback has had a better career since Tim Tebow, I would listen because of what he was able to accomplish over the course of more than just one season. He won the Heisman, but he also had a national championship season as a starter and another season where he was really, really good. Arch Manning being better than anyone since Tebow, the problem with that would be I think Arch Manning needs to start for more than 1 year to do that. And if Arch Manning's the best college quarterback since Tim Tebow,
will he be around for two more years?
I can't envision a scenario where he's the starter next season. So that's a huge, to me, that's a really big bet on the season you think Arch Manning is about to have, because you just listed guys like Joe Burrow and RG3 and Cam Newton and players who had enormous, Andrew Luck was phenomenal, you know, for people who maybe didn't get a chance to see him as a Stanford quarterback. Like, I mean, to say Arch is going to be better than anyone in the last 18 years of college football is a pretty significant, it reflects a lot of confidence, you know, and maybe he's carnival barking a little bit because it's the off season, but you know what, if you feel, I mean, there were recruiting people who felt like Arch Manning was a once in a generation.
He was the number one prospect in the country for 2023.
And one of the better quarterback prospects of the last 10 years, 20 years. So, I mean, there are people who followed Arch as a recruit that would tell you this is all in play. I'd like to see a little bit more, and the good news is you get to see Arch at Ohio State week 1. Texas opens against Ohio State the day after Auburn Baylor. And you get a pretty good glimpse of what Arch Manning looks like against quality competition the moment the season starts.
Appreciate the call, Daniel. You know, it's funny. All right, so I looked back yesterday. I was trying to remember exactly what the rankings were. And, yeah, Arch was the number one quarterback, the number one prospect in the country for 2023.
I wonder how many quarterbacks have been the number one prospect over the last 10, 20 years, too.
There have probably been a few.
But there's often a linebacker or a defensive end.
Were four quarterbacks in the top 10 prospects for 2023.
We're going to know these names, aren't we? Like, these are familiar
probably
names.
Probably. No. The number two overall prospect was Nico Amaliata.
Nico was from that year. Is this Jackson's year?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Jackson Arnold's in this.
Jackson Arnold was the number four quarterback in the country and the number 10 prospect in the nation. The number four prospect in the country and the number three quarterback is a guy who is also at his second school. I mean, look, Arch is the only one who's still at the same school.
Yeah. And he didn't start the last couple of years either.
He hasn't started it. He hasn't been the starter at Texas.
I feel like things have been pretty comfy.
Nico, where's Nico now?
Nico's at UCLA.
Oh, okay. Well, the number three guy started at UCLA.
Oh,
and he's now at Oregon.
Okay, yeah, we got
Dante Moore.
Yeah, Dante Moore is the big, and that was, you know, when Chip Kelly left, folks were sort of expecting Dante Moore to follow shortly thereafter, even though he was saying a lot of the right things. But that tells you how, I mean, and again, this is not to, if you're excited about Peyton Falzone, am I saying that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. If you're excited about Peyton Falzone, by all means, it's exciting that Auburn has landed a quarterback prospect from the class of 26. And he could very well be. You think about Nico. You think about Lenore Sellers. We've seen redshirt freshmen. We've seen quarterbacks show up.
Right.
And this is good news for Deuce, by the way. We've seen quarterbacks show up and redshirt for a year where they don't play much at all and then step on the field in year two and look great. Nico. Lenore Sellers was a redshirt freshman this past year. There are people who think Lenore Sellers could go in the top 10 of the NFL draft in 2026. I'm seeing him next to Keldrick Falk in a lot of NFL draft projections as far as how good people think Lenore Sellers could be. You know what happens a lot, though, too, is a quarterback shows up, he redshirts a year, and then he leaves because he's not really on the depth chart. And so that's the spectrum of possibilities with Peyton Falzone. Like, maybe he shows up, and it takes a year of tuning, and then he's ready to be the starting quarterback and perform at a high level. There's also a very real chance, just based on how many quarterbacks, you know, the story is, yeah, he showed up, and he spent a year at a school, and one of several things led to him deciding that he went somewhere else.
It's funny. I mean, Dante Moore's, his numbers, his career is a little different. He played a good bit as a true freshman at UCLA, and they weren't great. They weren't a great team, but that didn't really take that much off the luster. Oregon really wanted him. They brought him in, and he was a backup last year, and now he's the guy.
He did leave when Chip Kelly left. That's right.
He did. I was just reading when I clicked through the list of players, I saw Dante Moore, and I was just, what's the latest with him? He's being projected as one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten this year, even after throwing eight passes last year as the Oregon backup.
Yeah. And a lot of that's based on – I mean, some of that's based on
– most of it is based on his pedigree coming out of high school.
Sure.
And that's where I, want to just remind people that, Jackson Arnold was considered pretty darn good. Well, we will see. This is a big opportunity for a lot of these guys. I mean, Arch Manning – we've seen a lot of him, but now he's the man.
The example, another quarterback who was pretty good that you could talk about in that last 2 decades or so of college football is Baker Mayfield, who also switched schools after not really figuring in there at Texas Tech, was a red shirt or whatever was a walk-on. It was a walk-on at Texas Tech or whatever happened there. Ends up at Oklahoma, and now he's a star for the Bucks. And Baker Mayfield shortly thereafter, he had Kyler Murray. And Kyler Murray is the example I always point. Like, you look at best case scenario for Jackson Arnold. And granted, this wasn't overnight with Kyler Murray, but Kyler Murray looked lost on a college football field. He was a gigantic recruit. A lot of people thought he was going to switch to baseball, but he was a gigantic football recruit, and he looked lost as a true freshman. Like, it just wasn't it was not connecting. And he leaves, spends a year backing up Baker Mayfield. Everyone thinks there's going to be a big drop-off from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray because of what you'd seen out of Kyler Murray at A&M, and he was maybe better. Maybe even better. And I think that's the Joe Burrow year. So he wasn't the best quarterback. he wasn't the best quarterback in college football. He was one of them. He was on the list. So he won the Heisman. It was the year before Joe Burrow. Kyler Murray was in 18.
It was the year Joe Burrow. A lot of people thought, he's nothing special.
Yeah, it was the year before. The year before Joe Burrow became Joe Burrow. Yeah. Sometimes, Sheryl Crow song, "Change Will Do You Good."
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes it's a new setting, new coat of paint, new teammates, new coaches, and you can look more like that quarterback you were supposed to be. Come on, Jackson Dart was okay at USC.
Yeah, he was. He wasn't great.
Won the first round pick.
No,
Like, so, I mean, there are quarterbacks
right
you could point to.
Right time, you know, right fit. So we'll see. All right, let's get to our who do we have on the line?
Greg.
And let's get to Greg before we get to our final break. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Well, I've been sitting back listening and hearing everybody talk about the recruiting, and which I agree is something to be desired. But I'm going to give y'all my take on it if you got this second. Bruce Pearl, how did he build this roster he's got coming in this year?
This year, I mean, it's
a transfer portal.
Well, I mean, it's the portal. It's high schoolers. It's players from international players. Yeah. Players from like he's overturned every stone to find the guys to team with Todd.
Exactly. So here's my other thing, man. So you got these high profile guys like, you know, just like a Cam Coleman, C.D. Morgan, people, you know, high caliber players, 5-star athletes. They want the money, right? So this whole rev share basically turning into what's going to be something like an NFL mock-up. Auburn, I think, is playing a long game. I think Auburn is too deep, can play with anybody in SEC. If they don't, I'm going to be straight up, I'm going to say it on air right here. If Auburn don't win 8 games this year, I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't going to be the players' fault. I'm just going to say it like that.
It's hard to argue with that. When you look at Auburn's roster, I don't disagree.
And so I think, honestly, I don't think Auburn's going to – I'd be surprised to see Auburn take maybe 18 to 20 high schoolers this year if they take that. And I think they'll rely in, you know, the reload phase when you got a proven commodity that comes in. You can do NIL stuff with him. Hey, you know, Jackson Arnold, for instance, he comes in, he wants some money, just off, like you said, the pedigree and kind of what he's done. They know what he's capable of. You can get some, you know, some collectors and everybody behind him on that, and you can get him some money. You can get the money he wants.
And I'll tell you what, Greg, now, if you do win 9 games or so, then you're going to be able to flip some of these kids that have committed somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's
the thing, and you've got till December. If signing day were, you know, next Wednesday, I'd be very concerned. It's a long way now, and Auburn's got the opportunity, and it's either going to work or there'll be a whole lot of changes.
And focusing on the portal might be a pivot because of what's happening, you know, on the trail for these high schoolers. But the fact that it all just illustrates what is on the line for Hugh Freeze. And I'll single him out. In those first 4 games against major conference competition in the first half of the schedule, because the only noteworthy thing, unfortunately, that's going to happen in the 2 paycheck games is an injury or a loss. Like you can destroy those 2 teams. Doesn't tell you anything about how you're going to do against A&M and Oklahoma.
And that's not going to affect the perception of any fan or any recruit.
And it won't change a thing if you don't come home from Baylor victorious either. Like you can't do anything for 2 weeks until you play that game against Oklahoma.
Yeah. So I do agree though. I mean Auburn is playing this one for December, not for June or July. We'll get to our final break of hour number 1. Love for you to join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number 1 of the Wednesday Drive. Again, a reminder that there will be no show tomorrow or Friday, so we'll be back on Monday. And I think next week everything is should be as usual. We'll have Brian Matthews back in on Monday. We should have Jason Caldwell. Because I think the next ambush is like as you were saying a while ago, is like the 14th. So I don't think there is one next week, and then hopefully Justin Ferguson able to join us. Hopefully we get him on for a little bit. When he gets, maybe he'll be getting there, and before things get started, there with the ambush at Lake Martin. We can have him on for a little bit and get his thoughts as we head into the July 4th weekend. Again, we've got another hour to go, so stick with us. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390 here on the Wednesday Drive.
Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. We appreciate everybody joining us here on this. It will be the final show before the 4th for us. No shows tomorrow on any of the live sports shows, the Max Roundtable, On the Line, or The Drive, tomorrow or Friday. We're very thankful to have a couple of days off there, and we'll be back ready to go on Monday. So we've got an hour to go today and love for you to join in. You can give us a call on The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on The Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And let's get right to the Drive hotline. And Brett has been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I wasn't able to look online today. Are there any new excuses out there for why Auburn's doing so bad?
No new ones. C.D. Morgan head to Alabama as expected. I'm going to stick with, they're a combination of things, but I think the most important one is not Hugh Freeze is playing too much golf and has forgotten how to recruit. I don't think Auburn's run out of money. I do think, though, they are being conservative with their money, and what they wanted to do first, the most important thing, was retain all the players that they could, and they have done a great job of that.
And Brett, you know we're not in the business of providing cover fire for Hugh Freeze in these situations. To me, I would be surprised if Auburn was doing well on the recruiting trail right now, because I feel like you've gone as far as you can promising the future.
Let's wait until we have a better roster. And you've got one now.
And it speaks to the need for Hugh Freeze to deliver results this fall, especially in those four games against major conference teams in the first half of the season.
Well, okay, but if you get a four-star receiver who decides to go to Kentucky, I mean, their coach probably got a very good chance he doesn't make it through the season.
Yeah, well,
they're having to borrow money to fund things, which is amazing in and of itself. But, you know, everybody's trying to keep their players for next year.
Right, but one thing, Auburn's done, though, a better job than a lot of schools have at keeping them. I mean, especially after the kind of years that Auburn's had the last 2 years, to not have more players walk. But I thought one of the things that was really interesting was the fact that that C.D. Morgan told some reporters coming out of his visit to Auburn, he was asked about NIL, and he said Auburn told him they couldn't come up with a number for him right now. They get back to him closer to December. So, I mean, if you're doing that, you're not going to be picking up a lot of commitments if you're not telling them what you can give them. But I think Auburn is also – it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out, because if other schools are telling players, yeah, we can give you what we were giving players last year, but then they can't later, that's going to blow up in their faces. I mean, I think Auburn is being – it's not just conservative. I think they're not wanting to overextend themselves or promise more than they'll be able to deliver.
And I'm not terribly comfortable talking about this too, Brett. I bet that the rumors that people are using Hugh Freeze's health situation against him on the recruiting trail are probably true, and it's probably something else that you have to overcome on the recruiting trail while you continue to serve in the position while dealing with a health problem.
But Brad, I mean, look, yeah, go ahead.
But health problems, they ought to be able to overcome that. I mean, my God, have one top recruit come in here, call the doctor, and let the doctor say, okay, look, this is the deal. I mean, he's not fixing to die. I mean,
right? I don't think there's a good reason or excuse. I just keep thinking it has to do with what's riding on this season this fall.
I agree.
That's what I keep coming back to.
But tell me this: if they're waiting to tell them what they can give them in December, we already know about the $20.5 million. What's stopping them? I mean, tell me what's going to change between now and
then. I think they're waiting to see if Auburn's good. I'm not saying it's a financial only thing. Like, I think that Auburn's probably my assumption is, and I made the comparison earlier in the week, Brett, that financials now in college football, it's the part of the ocean we can't see. Like, I don't know what's going on down there. Like, it's the light doesn't get down there. So I don't, you know, it's who knows. My assumption would be Auburn would be competitive financially. There are other extenuating circumstances, issues, obstacles that the Auburn coaches have to try to overcome. And I don't know if they can overcome them until they turn some of these games into wins on the field.
Hey, if they don't do that, then it may not be, it likely won't be them going out trying to recruit other players. So the most important thing right now, Brett, is this fall. This fall is critical. It's critical for this staff. It's critical for, the future of Auburn football.
And that would be the case. That would be the case if recruiting was going great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not.
But
once again, here we are in almost July 4th. Auburn has five recruits, and Lord willing, Auburn doesn't lose one of those, because there's talk one might be gone out of those five.
Well, so, I mean,
you know,
look at,
better pick up pretty quick, because it's not going to be like December. We're going to go in there and just round up a bunch of people. This thing tonight, Ambush, it is very appropriately named, I would say.
Just think of the situation that Billy Napier in Florida were in last year. It looked, I mean, he was more obviously on a hot seat than Hugh Freeze is right now. And they opened the season, you know, you're talking about how important Baylor is. How did Florida open the season last year? Oh, my goodness. I mean, it looked like that loss to Miami looked like Napier's not going to make it through the year. But they were able to turn it around. And when they did, I think they flipped 15 players from November 1st on. So, I mean.
Yeah, if Auburn's got a DJ Lagway, then, yeah, I'll go along with that. But I'm not sure we've got a DJ Lagway.
Not a DJ Lagway, but you got a guy that was a whole lot more highly touted coming out of high school.
I don't think you can afford to have missed on Jackson Arnold. That's something that we're going to find out in the first half this fall. Is that if you go out there and he doesn't seem ready for prime time against your primary competition, I don't know what chess moves. I mean, you can try Deuce, but I really don't know what kind of chess moves you're talking about Hugh Freeze being able to make.
Well, last thing is Jason Caldwell at this Ambush thing tonight?
Yeah.
But if you talk to him, tell him to take cover, because I believe stuff's going to be flying.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Yeah. Y'all have a great evening.
It's going to be. All right. You're predicting fireworks at the for the July 4th Ambush from our buddy Brett, and that's, you know, I don't think Brett is an extremist out on the edge on this by himself, right? I think there are a lot of folks sort of concerned about, although, you know, I share the concern, but I understand it feels like something that you're not going to be able to fix without wins.
There's nothing you can say that's going to make anybody feel better.
Right, and you can, and even if the recruiting class had were higher in the rankings, it wouldn't lessen the pressure that, like, I don't think you could have a recruiting class that would save you if
you go 500 again.
Yeah, if the team's
or worse. Because, I mean, if you go 5-7, 6-6, I don't care who you sign.
Because the other thing is, like, we had somebody mention earlier that you're not going to be able, you can't say it's the roster if Auburn goes 500 this year.
Yeah.
I don't think you could say it was the roster last year. The only reason why Auburn was a 500, a 500 team or a 5-7 team.
No, it wasn't. I mean, but there were again, it's still early, and there were some injuries. There were some things last year.
Agreed. I think it's
but there are. But you can't. But it can't just continue. You can't continue like I told a couple of people. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. It may, I mean, Hugh Freeze may be a really good coach. These players may be really good, but if things don't gel and it doesn't work out, or players keep getting injured, then you're gonna have to see some changes.
One of your least favorite words could pop up, Bill. Unacceptable. That's where it could.
I do not like
that. Right, but
I mean, because the people that are usually saying it. Have no clout.
How about
this? It doesn't matter if it's anything's acceptable to them.
This fall, the results need to be acceptable to the people who make the decision.
That's right. The people that can make the decision as to whether or not things are going to continue. 334-321-1390.
Great stuff from Brett.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, yeah, I mean, look, it's all on fall. It's all on this fall. And again, you know, as we talk about how important, and I think everybody has said the most important game is the Baylor game. Well, I'm sure Florida fans felt last year the most important game was the Miami game. But then it wasn't. But then they won big. Then DJ Lagway emerged, and Florida became a much better team.
Yeah, and those are both non-conference games too, which I think matter some in sort of the conversation about the most important games of the year. But still, I mean, what would with the Baylor game, the fact that you have two paycheck games right afterward, that's I mean, it's just going to be hard to, like, you're going to be living with the result of the Baylor game for a while, because you don't have a chance for a couple of weeks to erase or change what the perception of the team is after that game. You get chances later in the year. You get Oklahoma and A&M and Georgia. Like, there are chances.
You get them a couple of weeks later.
But after that Baylor game, that's sort of what people are going to think you are for a couple of weeks, is what you are Friday night in Waco. And that's, if you don't deliver that night, that could be sort of a dicey proposition.
I mean, really,
Picante.
I'm looking back again at Florida last year. They lose 41-17 at home to Miami. They beat Samford 45-7, and then they lose at home to Texas A&M 33-20.
Yeah,
they are 1-2, and we all are sure.
And
Billy Napier is done.
There's a Tennessee game coming, right, where they play okay?
Yeah, they played okay after they beat Mississippi State and Central Florida. They lost in overtime to Tennessee.
That was the game where I think people were thinking, if this is a one-sided,
they get blown out.
That felt like it could be the last night of the Napier dynasty at Florida. If he didn't turn it around,
he'd be dying nasty.
He didn't turn it around, but instead they almost beat Tennessee and then play pretty good football the rest of the way.
Yeah, so I mean, but they did what they had to do. They went from sub 500 and to turning it around and winning their last four ball games.
But Napier was absolutely on the brink in the first half of the season.
And they were nowhere to be found. Remember, they're recruiting. They weren't anywhere in the top 60 in recruiting either, like Auburn is now. And they finished number six.
And if you're not impressive in Waco, I feel like that could be the feeling in some of those conference games you have a little bit later on.
We need to get to our first break. Justin Ferguson is on hold. He's up in at the Auburn Ambush at Lake Martin, and we'll talk with him when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're now joined for a few minutes by Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, who is up at the lake where the Auburn ambush is on tap in a few minutes. Ferg, how's it going?
We've ambushed Ferg with the request for a segment.
Before Hugh Freeze is ambushed, as a couple of our callers have insinuated.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time up here for sure. I mean, we've got four coaches supposed to be talking here in about 20 minutes or so before the big ambush event. It's a sold out event here, so they're expecting a pretty big crowd.
Text called and was trying to figure how he could get in. It's like too late.
Yeah, no, it's they're expecting a huge crowd. Obviously, they ran out of spots for this one, and it's an interesting spot right here. I mean, just Willow Point, I didn't know this. Willow Point's kind of being renovated the golf course right now, so it's kind of interesting vibe out here with people digging up, golf holes, but crowd already starting to form out here for this ambush event and crossing several sports for the Tigers. And I know people are be excited to hear from all these coaches.
And of course, next up is football, and I mean we've been talking
Tex
about
Tex has a couple of minutes to put together a really good Justin Ferguson disguise, and maybe he can sneak into the ambush that way. But otherwise, yeah, it's going to be there are still tickets available for Atlanta, the Auburn website points out. That's the one the Monday night before media days. Ferg can't make that because he'll be at the Home Run Derby during the Atlanta ambush, but this one's been sold out for a while.
Yep. 100%. And as Will was saying, football coming up. I know a lot of people are just really interested right now in football, and I think I heard y'all talking heading into that last segment. It's just I think so much of what's going on right now for Auburn. I think the only cure for it is just going to be winning football games. Mm-hmm. I think the timing of the stuff with the house settlement. And just kind of the way Auburn's roster is kind of young right now, and the struggles they've had on the field. I mean, when you talk recruiting, I think it just really, really underscores how much pressure it is for Auburn to step up and succeed and have a much better season, this fall.
I thought it was a nice pickup, boy, just sort of out of nowhere that Auburn was able to get in Jacoby Matthews, who was one of the top prospects. Top safeties coming out of high school a couple of years ago and played 2 years for DJ Durkin at A&M.
Yeah, no, it's a really good pickup. I mean, having a guy that has that familiarity with the scheme, with the coaching staff always helps. Jacob Waters at OA News pointed this out yesterday. I didn't even realize it. They add a guy in Jacoby Matthews. He will be the most experienced safety in Auburn's room coming in just because of what he was able to do on the field against Texas A&M. And obviously, Auburn's safety room was young. That was a group we did talk about here in the offseason where it's like, oh wow, you really, really like what you got out of Caleb Harris last year, and you like Sylvester Smith, and then New Boy Fagans and Eric Winters are on the rise, and you got Tate Seymour out of the portal from Georgia Tech, but it just really lacked a ton of top end experience, and you can never have too many DBs. A guy who's been very familiar and with this scheme and with the defensive coordinator always helps. And I think, you just take it this late in the game because, this is a rare time to be adding a guy with experience. But he was in a very unique situation with, being in JUCO, trying to get his grades up and, needing to kind of figure all that out here in the last part of the summer. So, or I guess in the summer. And so, I think it's a really good pickup for them. And, again, I think – a lot of people would love to see Auburn be racking up recruiting wins right now, in July. And, obviously Auburn want to be in a lot better spot. But I do think it just, like I said, it just reinforces that there's just pressure for them to win right away. And so maybe a guy like Jacoby Matthews can help them be a better team on the field this fall and kind of go from there.
Yeah, and it speaks to, last season Auburn had to go to very young players in the secondary, without other options. And the number of options that DJ Durkin and the secondary coaches seem to have at all the spots at the moment, corner, inside corner, depending on what happens with Champ Anthony and safety, they've done a really good job putting together an impressive list of both experienced players and some freshmen that I know caught your eye this spring.
Yeah, I love the mix they have in the secondary. I think Auburn's secondary is positioned to be really good because they have guys who were good young players last season. They got really talented freshmen who could play right away, and they went out and got some transfers to help reinforce them. We mentioned, you know, Matthews, but I mean, we talked about this not too long ago. I really like Rayshon Pleasant and Rayon Strader and what they bring to the table. I think Rayshon Pleasant, you know, talking to some folks this week, I think there's just a lot of excitement about what he could provide, knowing what kind of cover guy he was at Tulane, and then also, you know, All-American type of return man as well. So, yeah, it's a great mix. And look, that's no surprise. As all the struggles that Auburn has had over these last few years, the one position group that I think across different coaches and different coordinators and different head coaches even, secondary has just been done a really good job of recruiting, developing, and retaining. And I think you see the proof in, you know, the guys Auburn's put into the league from their secondary, and I think, you know, it's continued to be a place where people want to come play and get developed and know they can get some early opportunities, like you were saying, Dan. Like, Auburn had to turn to some young guys early, and they stepped up and showed out.
Talking with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Last show of the week for us, and Justin's up in the up in Lake Martin checking out the ambush tonight, so he's able to give us a you know, a preview. Stephen Pearl speaking to the to the media tonight. There's been some exciting developments with how about with former Auburn men's basketball players over the last week or so, between the NBA draft and Jabari Smith signing a very big check.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, you know, we talked about it on our podcast that went up today, Dan, but, like, you know, all that stacks up on each other, you know. You get a guy like Jani Broome who goes from mid-major to draft pick, and I think he's in a great spot in Philly where, you know, they have Joel Embiid, and they don't have a ton of depth behind him, but they're used to playing with a back-to-the-basket center who can do kind of that modern stuff. That, you know, Jani's got a really good point. And, you know, we talked about heading into this summer, we were thinking, okay, is this the year where Jabari, you know, gets a new start somewhere and they pull the trigger? Because it looks like Houston doesn't really have him in their plans, big-term plans long, you know, in the future. And lo and behold, what do? They trade for Kevin Durant and say, we're not moving Jabari Smith for that. And so he was a no-go. They end up moving Jalen Green instead. I think, you know, Jalen Green and Jabari just didn't really work quite as well together on the floor. And then Jabari not only is like, no, we're not going to try to use him as a trade piece for another chip. No. They decide to go all in on him and sign him to a really big, you know, rookie extension. And, for Auburn to be able to point to that and say, hey, if you're an elite prospect, you can come here and get developed and get paid in the NBA. It's a great example of that. And I think Jani is another example of, you can come here and we can put you on NBA draft radars. And I think that's a really good sign. And then you got some other guys, you know, obviously Dylan Carwell with the Kings, Miles Kelly with the Mavs on two-way deals. You got the Exhibit 10 deal for Chandy Johnson with the Cavs, I believe. I think that's right. Yeah, and then, you know, Denver Jones, you know, getting a G League shot or a summer league shot as well. So, you know, it's just a lot of guys that earned their way to this position at Auburn, you know, from the five stars like Jabari, and obviously bringing back to Todd Pettiford to the guys who had to grind their way from smaller levels to get to that spot. It's a really cool way to be able to just appoint as a program and say, look, we develop guys, we get them paid, we give them opportunities. And, you know, it's rare that you can be able to say that at a place like Auburn, and they're in a really, really good spot right now.
Justin, we learned yesterday a little bit more about Auburn's schedule in men's basketball this fall, and you made an interesting point on the podcast that people might think it's less ambitious than last year just because you're not playing Duke, I guess. This is a murderer's row of some of the best teams in college basketball that Auburn will see in November and December to get them ready for SEC play.
100%. You're playing Houston and Purdue again. So, you know, you got that same from last year. You don't play Duke, but I think that NC State game is going to be fun. You don't play Duke, but you have a true road game at Arizona, which should be a pretty big matchup. And then, this Players Era Festival, Auburn officially knows that they're going to be playing Oregon and Michigan in those first two matchups. And then, obviously, what they do in those first two determines how they'll play on that third day in Vegas. But, Oregon, always a super athletic team. You know, Dan Altman's one of the best in the business and has been for a very, very long time. you get a Sweet 16 rematch with Michigan, and that Michigan team just went into the portal like immediately after they lost to Auburn in Atlanta and did some serious work. Could be a preseason top five team. And so when you look at Houston, you look at Purdue, you look at Michigan, those could be top five teams. So, you know, the fact that, yes, there isn't a Duke on there for Auburn, but, man, there's a whole lot of really, really talented teams. And, you know, I think the thing with Auburn's non-conference schedule is they're going to take some losses. They're going to learn a lot about themselves. And, you know, the goal is to hit SEC play and know who you are and be battle-tested. And, again, I think we're gonna look at January when Auburn starts playing SEC ball and look around and say, man, there isn't a team that's been more tested in the country than this one.
Yeah, and I think it's great. You know, it's a great opportunity there. Don't expect, you know, it to be, you know, a 16-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, 12-1 or whatever it is. I mean, because there are going to be some bumps while you learn, while they learn to play with each other and the combinations, things like that. But boy, that ought to get them ready for SEC.
Oh, 100%. And I think the ceiling of this team is really high. I think this is a super athletic team. It's going to be a faster team. They're really exciting. And I think, you know, we talked about this a little while back as well. Like, yes, Auburn's hitting the reset button. They're hitting a pretty big one. They bring Todd back, and that's it. They did do really good work in the portal. They did sign a pretty good high school class as well. I will say, though, even those teams we talked about, Houston, Purdue, Michigan, you know, that could be preseason top five, they're all going through a period of reset. There's not really a team in college basketball where you say, well, they're bringing back the vast majority of who they were last season and they were national title contenders. Everybody's going through some sort of reset. So I think for Auburn, it's a good time to be learning, and it's a good time to be hitting that reset button because, again, I think once you get into that SEC schedule in January, you're going to be able to look around and say, this team knows who they are, they know how to play with one another, and they know how they measure up against the best of the best.
Yeah, no question. Justin, no, you got to run. I mean, things are about to get started there. Will you be surprised if Hugh gets asked either by, even if it's not by any of you guys? I would think Hugh's going to have to answer a question or two about what's going on right now, don't you?
100%. I think it's going to be roster management, NIL, stuff like that, you know, and in recruiting and just kind of how they feel right now. You know, obviously they can't talk specifics until guys are signed. But, yeah, no, it'll definitely be brought up because it is the most obvious thing. I do think, though, Auburn is in a position, and I think, you know, with Freeze and kind of these ambush things and media days coming up here real soon, I think Auburn is in a position where you can kind of say right now, all right, you know, kind of pivot towards this upcoming season.
Yep, here
not
it is.
Because not only is it going to, you know, is it pressing, but I think that's going to be the key for Auburn to get out of the hole they are in recruiting. It's going to be, hey, look at all these young guys, look at all these talent we have this season. We think this is the crew to kind of get Auburn pushed back, and we feel like the momentum will be there from them. You know, this is a good time to kind of hit that narrative on the head.
Yep. Ferg, let everybody know how they can get the Observer and what you got coming up.
Yep, auburnobserver.com. Check it out. I'm going to have a newsletter out tomorrow morning from what we hear here at Lake Martin, so you can check that out. It'll come out at 6 a.m. Me and Dan did a podcast today, went about an hour and a half, talking a lot of football, a lot of basketball, some Nike deal stuff as well. Check that out. Mailbag will be out on the 4th on a Friday, so we'll have that as well. I did a big breakdown of the Nike deal for those of you who are still wanting kind of more information and insight into what all went down there. So auburnobserver.com, $60 a month or $60 a year. Sign up right now. You get everything we got going on straight to your email inbox.
All right, Ferg, appreciate you joining us for a few minutes. And you get Profar. It may have been a little costly, but you got him.
Hey, you know, I'm looking forward to Ronnie being in the All-Star game and in the Home Run Derby. And then after that, I'm going to be starting to look at, like,
starting to look at the
draft
fall
odds.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm looking at lottery odds. I'm looking at draft prospects. at least the Braves, after being bad for most of the season, at least we can now point to the injury excuse.
But there you
I'm
go.
Glad I can have that
Ferg
one.
Ferg will spend substantially more time at the Columbus games scouting the future in like October and September, not August and September.
All right, man. Hey, happy 4th, Justin.
Yeah, y'all too. Thank you.
See you, bud.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join in if you'd like. 334-321-1390 here on the Wednesday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Wednesday. And again, there will be no shows on Thursday or Friday. But, hey, we just got an update from Riley as to, I mean, there are tons of ball games that are going to be on ESPN 106.7 over the weekend. On the 4th of July, you've got Yankees and Mets at 1:30, Rangers and Padres at 5, Yankees-Mets again on Saturday, and then Sunday, Cardinals-Cubs, Rangers-Pods, and let's see. Oh, he's added a couple. Cubs and – how can that be? No, that's the next week. Okay. Yeah, so that's all this weekend. I'm going, Cubs aren't playing two different teams over the weekend. I mean, it's great over a holiday weekend, but, I mean, so there's a lot of Major League Baseball on ESPN 106.7 this weekend. And
yeah, the Saturday right before the All-Star break, we'll have the Cubs-Yankees series. But this weekend, Yankees-Mets and then Cardinals-Cubs.
Couple of great matchups.
Rangers-Padres, too. You know, Padres are an exciting team. And then we'll have a lot of coverage on ESPN 106.7 once we're back. A full week before media days and the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby and a lot of cool stuff coming up in no time at all.
Yeah, now, Ferg, we touched on the Braves there as we were going out with Ferg. More bad news for the Braves today. Spencer Schwellenbach is out with a fractured elbow. I mean, it has just been – it's been a nightmare season
pitching
for
arm.
The Braves.
Want to mention?
Yeah, it's not even on the other arm.
Like not that it's
fractured pitching arm, elbow.
Is there any word on what happened? Did he take a comebacker? Or I mean, it's it probably wouldn't have been during I didn't see.
Let's see. Mark Bowman of MLB.com said Schwellenbach felt sore after his last game against the Phillies.
Wow.
So I mean, that's all it was, just throwing. And they found a small fracture in his elbow.
I don't think you bring him back this season. I know they're talking about September.
Not the way things are going. I mean,
maybe in a playoff push.
Yeah,
you'd think about it, but it
doesn't look like that's going to be the case.
Yeah, but it's his first season.
They're 8 games under 500 right now.
I think it's kid gloves. You know what I mean? First big season in the.
And he's having an outstanding year.
Oh, he was. I think he was was he eligible for Rookie of the Year? Would he have been?
I don't think he was.
It's his first full season as a starter. But this guy is. He was having an excellent season, and he started 21 games last year. He would have been eligible for Rookie of the Year, but he's still a really pleasant surprise for the Braves this year. And I would think that a guy that age and, I mean, look, if the games are super important in September. Maybe you think about it, but I would think it seems very easy to pull the plug on him for the entire season. And I'll tell you one disappointing thing about a lost season this year for the Braves, Bill. We talked about it a little bit off the air. You've got 3 more guaranteed years of Acuña,
right?
With that incredibly team-friendly $17 million deal,
which he's not gonna take another early deal.
Oh no, he's seeing free agency after 2028. You have 26, 27, mm-hmm. and 28 guaranteed with Acuña. After that, look, I wouldn't be surprised. He's making $17 million a year. I wouldn't be surprised if he made $50 million. Like he tripled it.
Yes.
When he went to free agency after the 28 season, if there's nothing sort of rocking the boat labor wise or contract wise, and things continue on this trajectory, Ronald Acuña could be a 8-year, $400 million type of contract.
Oh yeah, he could be
in a couple of years. And the Braves, I think, have to. There was a little bit of this when Freddie was approaching free agency too. Although I think the Braves did a very good job setting up a world without Freddie Freeman in their lineup. But these 3 years feel like a window with Acuña. If this season is
he'll be a free agent after the 28 season.
Yes.
All right, so he will turn 31 at the end of that that season. I mean, he'll turn 31 before the 29 season.
You think there are some teams that, based on the way he's played right now, if the number could start with a 4? Or as far as guaranteed money?
I think he needs to play the next couple of years injury-free as possible. That's the only concern with Ronald Acuña is can he stay healthy?
Yeah, I mean, he's,
when he is healthy, he is great.
He's having a Hall of Famer's 20s. Like now he's now he needs to. I mean, Andrew Jones had his had a Hall of Famer's 20s,
yep,
and is not in the Hall of Fame because the drop off was significant enough. But
Acuña's done more than Andrew did,
and Acuña's off to a better start,
yeah,
and is showing no signs of slowing down. And so yeah, I would say again, not to. I mean, and the Braves will probably be fine even beyond that. But these 3 years, and that would be the argument for selling now with guys that don't factor into the next 3 years of Braves baseball, is you've got 3 years to you got three. If it's not happening this year, you are guaranteed three more postseasons with Ronald Acuña. You are if you're not going to the playoffs this year, you are guaranteed the chance at three,
yeah,
more postseasons with Ronald Acuña. And I think that's and the other thing to think about would be on a team friendly deal like that. If it were an extended drought, you know, we could be talking about him the way we were talking about Soto, or the way we were talking about these players that have had just absolutely, you know, Otani as, mm-hmm, he approached free agency, where it's like, you know, you could totally reset the farm system and
the way the Angels should have done.
Yeah, what the Angels should have done, and what the Nationals did,
right,
with the dealing, yeah, Soto
and
to the
things don't look that bad for them.
No, I would like that's not a question to approach now. I think the closer you get to the end of
but I would say in 2027 you're looking, you know, as that one's going on and he's approaching. You know, he's going through the next to the last year.
27 deadline,
yes,
would be where you could potentially.
That's what I mean. 27 about this time.
Yeah, if the next 2 years aren't have too many downs and not enough ups, that 27 deadline would be where you could, mm-hmm, potentially deal Acuña for
and get the absolute most for
and get a king's ransom. Yeah, mm-hmm,
yeah. Just it's crazy that we're talking about this because I mean I really felt. Yeah, I felt like there's no way the Braves weren't going to be in the playoffs. But, I mean, you look right now, and they're seven games out of the last playoff spot with six teams that they have to pass.
And more bad news. You know, yeah.
It's not as though, like, okay, well, all these guys, you know, they're going to click it. They're not going to have them.
No.
They're not going to have Chris Sale for a while. They're not going to have Schwellenbach maybe for the rest of the year.
Smith Shawver was off to that great
Schauver
start and had the UCL surgery. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you've got – they've still got the bullpen problems that we,
yep,
were talking about a couple of weeks ago. They haven't made a move there. I mean, Dylan Lee was okay.
Who is their guy? I mean, they don't have a closer.
I would think it's Dylan Lee, but the problem is you're also using him in a high-leverage situation where you need a lefty in the seventh inning.
They had to use him in the seventh, and it didn't work out.
Right, and if you're not using him, you're using Bummer.
Yeah.
Right, so it's like that's not necessarily an ideal thing. So we thought they were maybe gonna, if they were gonna add, we looked at the infield and the bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Looking at shortstop in the bullpen.
Now you're talking about starting pitcher too.
They need a starter.
Like
and what do you give up for that?
I mean,
they've got a really good farm system, but they've been pretty good about not letting their best young guys go.
Or what kind of starter can you get with what you can give up right now, or what you're willing, mm-hmm, to give up right now? It's fair to wonder. And that's going to be you could have some interesting times coming for the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, I doubt Alex Anthopoulos is going to be as adamant that the Braves won't be sellers now. Probably still don't want to be, but not in full sell mode. But you're definitely not in full buy mode either.
And we talked about Sale and Ozuna as the guys that you would think about maybe selling, and they're both Ozuna's not hurt. But
No, he's not. The thing is, he's not having a terrible year, but he's not having the kind of year that he's had the last year and a half.
And now trading Sale is off the table,
yep,
and it's tough to find other guys who would really fit the bill as they would have value on the trade market, and they're not really big picture, you know, parts of the Braves, mm-hmm, long term. You know, those are the two guys that came to mind. And I mean, Iglesias, if he was playing well, would potentially be in that mix,
yeah,
but he's not. So you can't. I mean,
you'd find some people that'd be glad to take a chance on him, but they wouldn't want to give up an awful lot.
Right. It's not the kind of thing that you thought you could get if you know. It's not the market you would expect for a closer.
For a guy who has been an all-star closer.
Exactly.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in if you'd like. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
Jonathan here with University Ace Hardware. At University Ace, we make